ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 41, Krishna and Balaram enter Mathura, text number 9. Tansamityaha Bhagavan, Tansamityaha Bhagavan, Akruram Jagadishvara, Akruram Jagadishvara, Grihitva panina panim Grihitva panina panim Prasritam prahasanniva Prasritam prahasanniva Tansamityaha Bhagavan Akruram Jagadishvara Grihitva panina panim Prasritam prahasanniva You were so good last weekend. Akruram Jagadishvara. Very good. Tan with them. Samitya meeting. Aha said Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akruram to Akrura. Jagat Ishvara, the Lord of the Universe. Grihitva, picking. Panina, with his hand. Panim, his hand. Prasritam, who was humble. Prasan, smiling. Iva, indeed. Translation. After joining Nanda and the others, the Supreme Lord Krishna, the controller of the universe, took humble Akrura's hand in his own and smiling spoke as follows. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachayane Nivesesa Sanyodi Pasichade Shatayane. It's interesting here. It states that Krishna, the controller of the universe, he took humble Akrura's hand in his own. It's like such a contrast, isn't it? The controller of the universe and a humble devotee. And Krishna is taking his hand. This indicates to us how spiritual life is so contrast to material understanding. In the material world, people are proud, and especially if they are successful in whatever they do, they like to flaunt their success. And they want to show off. But the devotee, the more advanced he is, the more humble he is. And this humility actually attracts Krishna. Krishna becomes very attracted by such simplicity and humility of the devotee. And here, and the nice dealing between Krishna and his devotees too. Krishna is holding his hand and smiling. It's really nice. He took humble Akrura's hand in his own and smile when he speak. You have to understand actually the Vedic culture is very developed. It's not only in philosophy but in also in dealings between one another. It's very, very developed. The way they deal with one another, the way they speak to one another is very soft-spoken, very nice. I remember back in 1986, I think. 85, maybe 86. Just before the Iron Curtain came down. And me and my wife, we went to Moscow, Russia, to work with the BBT devotees there, to help them out. So I have like whole day meetings with the BBT devotees, especially the translators and the editors. One of the questions they asked me was very instructive. Said, you know, it's so often we find in Bhagavad when they translate, say, my dear king. And the question was, it doesn't sound good in Russian. It sounds very odd. I say it sounds very odd in any language because of our modern upbringing. Nobody addressed anyone, my dear this and my dear that. Maybe they call the husband and wife my dear, but who address the wife, my dear wife or my dear husband, my dear son, my dear daughter, my dear friend? Who do that? Nobody do that. Normally how we do it? Hey you! Hey, Arivo, come here. That's how we address one another. So it's really a far cry from the Vedic culture, which is so advanced, even in the way they address one another. So I was trying to, took me some time to convince them that we have to keep as it is when you translate. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is not only just about a philosophy, about glorifying the past sense of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But spice in between, within all this is also the nice dealing, the culture. We get a glimpse of the wonderful dealings between Krishna and his devotees, the highly elevated culture, the city. Later when we read as Krishna and Balaram enter Mathura, how the city is decorated, how the city is designed. And all this description is very wonderful. So here Krishna is holding the hand of Akrura when he speaks to him. Because also he's going to say something that Akrura is not going to like. We also find with Lord Brahma, when he, after he performed his austerity, Krishna became very pleased by his austerity. He also appeared before Lord Brahma and shake his hand. How nice would it be? Krishna appeared before us and shake our hand or hold our hands and say something to us. Oh, my dear devotee. Wouldn't that be nice? So what did Krishna say? So I'll read the next verse. Bhavan pravishatam agre sahayana purim griham vayam tvihavam mucchata tato draksya mahe purim. Lord Krishna said, take the chariot and enter the city ahead of us. Then go home. After resting here a while, we will go to see the city. Sri Akrura Vacha Naham Bhavabhyam Brahita Pravikshe Maturam Prabhu Chaktum Nahasimam Nata Bhaktam Te Bhaktavasala. Sri Akrura said, O Master, without the two of you, I shall not enter Mathura. I am your devotee, O Lord, so it is not fair for you to abandon me, since you are always affectionate to your devotees. Actually, come to think of it, such language, such dealing, sometimes you find in very, very formal occasion, like in a courtroom. Isn't that how they address the judge? How do they address the judge? Your Honor? When they speak to the judge, you have to say, Your Honor. If you're a little disrespectful, you get kicked out. Or you can be charged for contempt of court. But we find even in previous time, you read all these old literatures, like, I don't know, maybe 80, 100 years or more back, is how they address the governor of the house or king of the city. Oh, my Lord. Isn't it? You all study English literature here? Oh, my Lord. They address. Oh, my Lady. You find that. So here, Akrura says, Oh, Master. Without the two of you, I shall not enter Mathura. So Akrura is feeling that, after all, he has a mission sent by Kamsa to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. Now that he has finally brought them there, Krishna said, now, okay, you can go home. You can leave us alone here. So even from the material point of view, it's a bit, you go and pick up someone, you drive, and they say, all right, thank you very much, bye-bye. And you can go home now. He said, but I brought you here to do something, and then you just tell me to go home? So it's not fair for you to just abandon me after what I've gone through, and after all, I'm your servant. How can you just abandon me like that? We find a similar prayer by Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti also, after the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna, at the request of the Pandavas, he stayed in Hastinapur for some time, and then he decided now it's time to go back to Dwarka. And Queen Kunti came out running and offered her prayers. They said, now, you know, it seems like all the danger is gone and now you're leaving us. Before, when we were always in danger, so much difficulties, you're always with us. And now it seems that it's gone and you're leaving us. So I would rather that all these calamities happen to me again and again, because you'll always remain with us. The Pandavas, it's amazing actually that Queen Kunti is praying for all those calamities. No ordinary person will want to go through all these calamities, what the Pandavas has to go through. And what the Duryodhana and his cohorts put them through. They invited them to a house of lack, mid of the night. They have a plot to burn it down and kill them. They were exiled to the forest. The wife was insulted in the court. They were put through so many difficulties. Queen Kunti said, it doesn't matter, all these calamities, because you're always with us. That brings to us view that Tateno Kampam Susamikshamano Bunjana Ivatma Kritam Vipakam Ritvadva Pabir Vidandan Namaste Jiveta Yomukti Padesa Daiba. Actually, for the devotee, it doesn't matter for him. Even if he's put into some difficult situation, he will just consider this is due to my past karma. them suffering like that. That is actually a very important understanding to come to terms with. That what happened to us is not by chance. Nothing happens by chance. So a devotee without understanding, I just accept that this is due to my past karma that I'm reaping the results of. And he just tolerated it. He just accept and tolerate it. Usually what happened to people, he likes to put the blame on others. You are the cause of my problem. You are the cause of my problem. You said this to me. You did this to me. You don't give me proper arrangement. You don't give me proper facility. You don't give me this. You don't give me that. As if anyone owes them anything. Nobody owes us anything. So we are the architect of our own destiny. You cannot put any blame on anyone. So the devotee, he accepts that whatever situation he is in, he just accepts that this is due to my past karma. I'm suffering like that. And he just surrender to Krishna, depend on Krishna. Or if he's put into some very nice situation, he's thinking, oh, Krishna is so kind. I do not deserve it, but he's giving me such nice facility. So let me use this facility in the service of Krishna. So you just accept that whatever Krishna gives, this is Krishna's mercy. That's why, and I think it was 6th canto Bhagavatam, we have King Chitraketu. After he was instructed by Narada Muni, one time he was traveling in his airplane. He was surrounded by all his wives. He has over 60,000 wives or so, but I don't know if all of them were on that airplane. But anyway, he was surrounded. And he was traveling, came to Kailash, and he saw Lord Shiva giving a discourse to so many great sages, and Mother Parvati was sitting on his lap. You can imagine the scene, it's a pretty unusual scene. So he just laughed. He laughed and he thought, oh, look at Lord Shiva, looked like an attached householder, because he was comparing his own situation too. And Parvati, she didn't like the comments. Said this King Chitraketu is intoxicated by his pride, and dared to insult Lord Shiva. So she cursed him to be a demon, take birth as a demon. And King Chitraketu, he just got down from the plane, he offered his obeisances, and he just accepted the curse. And Lord Shiva said, just see the devotee. It doesn't matter. He goes to heaven, he goes to hell. Wherever he is, he just fully surrendered to Krishna. And Prabhupada explained the purpose that for a devotee, it doesn't really matter. He goes to heaven, he goes to hell. Because for a devotee, any place where there's no devotional service is worse than hell. Any place where there is devotional service is better than heaven. So it doesn't matter. It's just like we see some years back, the devotees in Russia, some of the stories we hear from these devotees, what they go through. For them, it was really hellish. Some of them were put into labor camp, and the worst, some of them were put into psychiatric hospital. We are told one devotee was put in psychiatric hospital. There were two of them, Armenian devotees. And even though they were in the psychiatric hospital, they continued preaching. And then the camp, the hospital director, the KGB, they thought, this is not good. They're too powerful, two together. Separate them. Put them in two different wards or different hospitals. They created two Namahata. It's like a cell group breaking up into two. They put them separate, they started preaching in two different places. They took away their japa beads. Then from the braid, somehow they're so innovative. From the braid, the crumbs, they make japa beads. Somehow they make it into a great heart. And they continue preaching, and they didn't know what to do with them. In psychiatric hospital, is pretty, if you are sane and you go into these places, it's pretty hellish. And sometimes, one time I was passing through this, I was going to see a hospital, and then I had to pass through this ward. And these people are like sticking there. face out on the window is like really eerie, you know? And you have to live amongst such people. And they give them all kinds of drugs. There was one devotee, they gave him all these drugs that he was saying that he was feeling so. He could not sit, he could not lie down, he could not walk. His whole body was just like, you know, feeling really. So they put them through such things. But still, they just continue chanting and they continue preaching. Such faith. So devote, and look at Prabhupada. Coming from Vrindavan. From Vrindavan. And coming to New York City. And not just New York City, the Bowery. The Bowery is like the lowest of the low. It's a place where if you happen to have to go through, I've never been there myself, but I was some residents of New York that described it to me. When you have to go through that part of town, you pray that you don't have to stop at the traffic light. If you do stop in the traffic light, some of these drunkards or whatever will come up to you, and sometimes they just spit on the windscreen and with their mop, with a cloth, and then mop him. And they ask you for some money. So Prabhupada was living there for the sake of preaching. He came there. And when he come to his apartment, he has to sometimes climb over all these drunkards who are lying on the doorstep to get to his apartment. And Prabhupada was just happy that he got some facility to preach Krishna consciousness, that he got some facility to fulfill the order of his preacher master. Although it's very inconvenient, but he did not feel inconvenienced by all these things. He remained in transcendental consciousness, just preaching. So, and the reason why is because when the devotee is fully engaged in devotional service, he's not in the material world. He's in the Brahma Buddha platform. He's on the platform of transcendence. And the most of material nature does not touch him. He's oblivion to what is going on around him. He's not touched by it, just like a lotus. The water may be on the top of the lotus leaf, but it's not attached to it. So although a devotee may be put into so many difficult situations, sometimes Krishna also put the devotee in seemingly difficult situations to glorify them even more. How now, after so many thousands of years, people are still reading Mahabharata and glorifying the activities of the Pandavas. Despite all that they go through. In this way they set an example for others. How despite all the difficulties that they go through, they still remain Krishna conscious. So it doesn't matter. Devotees, they just accept this is due to my past karma. It's all Krishna's mercy. They continue engaging devotional service in very humble. And we can have this kind of attitude only when we develop genuine humility. Genuine humility. That, I'm so fallen. That because of my fallen condition, now I'm put into this situation. Because of my offenses, now I'm reaping the results of my offenses. So when one develops such a devotional attitude, he becomes a candidate for liberation. He has a ticket. He has purchased the ticket going back home, back to Godhead. So sometimes it may be difficult for us to understand, if we really try to contemplate what the Pandavas go through and how Queen Kunti can actually offer the kind of prayer and please, you know. I remember that often tells devotees like back in the 90s, 93 or something, when I was the temple president in Copenhagen, and some devotees make some revolution. They kick me out. And it was a very traumatic experience. Very, very traumatic experience. But then once I go to over the initial stage, and instead of contemplating on the actions of those few persons, contemplate what they actually, the reason behind it and where I can improve. And when I look back, that was actually a defining moment in my spiritual life, that I went on a deeper inner search, so to say, and tried to improve myself in different ways. And looking back, was actually I came out better out of that whole experience. But I was telling that I wouldn't like to go through that again. You know, I wouldn't be like so be like Queen Kunti, say, "Oh, please let that happen to me again and again." Even though it was very beneficial, I really benefited from it. Once you go through the initial trauma, I benefited a lot from it and came out with a better understanding, improved a lot in my the way I deal with people, and so many things. But it was so traumatic, I don't want to go through that again. So you see the difference. That is just a small experience of compared to what the Pandavas and Queen Kunti has to go through. She was a mother. She was separated from her children for so many years, and all the time worrying what is happening to them. And all this while Krishna was just protecting them. And said, "But now you're leaving us. So I would rather have that situation when you're with us all the time." So Akrura is saying like this. He says, it's not fair. I'm just surrendered so, and then you are just abandoning us. You are supposed to be Bhakta Vasala. You are very affectionate towards the devotees. How can you just abandon me like that and just tell me to go home? And this is not the first time. There's always a reason when Krishna does something. What you were saying earlier, how the gopis, they surrendered everything. They gave up everything and just came. The just dropped everything and came to the forest to be with Krishna, engaged in the rasa dance, and Krishna just left. Just abandoned him. And that is described because there's just a tiny, tiny little tinge of pride. Just thinking, oh, Krishna is only with me. Just tinge of pride, Krishna left. So like that. So Krishna, he reciprocate with his devotees in so many wonderful ways. Very, very wonderful. And it requires some amount of faith. It really requires some amount of faith. Although very often we pray to Krishna, I say, "Yeah, I'm surrendered to you." Or we pray. Like in the morning, in the Shishastakam prayer, "Oh my dear Lord, you can do with me as you wish. You can make me broken hearted by not being present before me. You can embrace me roughly, whatever you do. You're always my worshipful Lord unconditionally." So we're chanting this prayer, but are we really chanting this prayer with feelings? Or we just like a tape recorder, we just go through it. Some ritual that we go through every morning. But what do we try to contemplate? What does it mean? What does it really mean when we chant that prayer that Krishna can do with me as you wish? So the morning we chant, "Oh, Krishna, you can do with me as you wish." You walk out the door and something happens. And immediately say, "What is going on here? Why is this happening to me? Why is it happening to me? Why is that happening to me?" And we start having doubts. We get upset, we get angry. So when you do chant these prayers, you also have to contemplate, well, what does it really mean? Do I really want to surrender like that? If I do not want to surrender on that level, maybe I should walk out the door when they chant this prayer. I shouldn't be chanting this prayer because Krishna may reciprocate. We chant this prayer, "Krishna, do with me as you wish." And Krishna said, "Okay." Alright? And then we say, "Oh." So we have to be prepared. We cannot say, "Okay, Krishna, I surrender to you, but you deal with me this way, okay?" Not that way, alright? Actually, Krishna knows. He knows what is good for us. After all, He's a Supreme Personality of Godhead, isn't it? The Supreme Controller. He knows everything. He knows past, present and future. So, in whatever way Krishna deals with us, it's the most perfect way for that particular time, place and circumstances. He's a perfect performer of activity according to time, place, circumstance. Kala Patradesha. We may not, but Krishna is. Sometimes we just say things in the most... say the right thing at the wrong time. At the appropriate time. So if you have that kind of faith, then Krishna can just deal with us in a way to help us. Because sometimes we say, when we take one step towards Krishna, Krishna is taking 10 steps towards us. What does that mean? Krishna make it easier for us? Yeah, it may be. He can also make it easier for us. But He also arranged a difficult situation whereby we have to surrender more. That is also one way Krishna can reciprocate with us. That 10 steps can be made in a way that put us in some difficult situation. Because normally, if we find ourselves in some normal situation, we may not. Sometimes we just go through the day like very casually. Sometimes you just go through a day without extra surrender. Things that we're doing maybe it's just easy. So sometimes Krishna put us in some difficult situation where we have to drag and make some extra endeavor. Or we may have to surrender more. So that's also Krishna's mercy to put us in that difficult situation. Especially if we are a preacher. Or if we are on Sankirtan. Then we are put in so many situations that we cannot predict. And just as someone is walking down the street and you approach, you don't know what kind of person that is. So that requires some surrender to be doing that kind of service, to approach that person, and who knows, that person may have a really bad day and he may hate the Hare Krishna. He just come up and just spit in our face. We don't know. So when we are performing the activity, we are actually depending on the protection of Krishna. It requires a lot of surrender to perform that service. So, or you go on the chanting party. Maybe you've been on a chanting party when sometimes these drunkards, they get upset by the chanting. They had the bottle and they were just, instead of the water when we do the offering, that kind of water, they spray all this beer all over us and it was disgusting. It was not only beer, but the beer filled with their maha. They've been drinking from it. And they go back like, practically you just feel like you want to throw the dhoti and kuta away. So it's risk. There's risk involved. And when there's risk involved, we do not know what the situations are. It's just like the sannyasis, they're traveling. They're traveling from place to place preaching. Sometimes we look at the sannyasi, so nice, They get some special mahaprasadam, special cooking, they get their own room and all this. And you think it's so nice. But it's not always like that. I was speaking to one Mataji. He's Nitya Tripta, Krishna Prema's wife, the one who did this music. And she was telling me when she was doing this darshan book, she has to travel to so many places, so many temples. And she said, I was given first class treatment everywhere I go. They gave me the sannyasi room, the special guest room and all these things. But I tell you, it's so austere. All this constant traveling is so austere. He said, now I get an idea, an appreciation. All this sannyasi is traveling. Some at least they stay a few days a week, and But if you have someone like Japta Maharaj, one day here, half a day there, 2 days there, and sometimes just 2 hours here, and it's moving, it's so tough. And sometimes you go to these places, they have no idea what they're offering. especially in the early days in Eastern Europe or even in Russia. And the preacher goes there, the devotee were not trained. They have no idea what to cook and what can be cooked and what cannot be cooked, what can be offered and what cannot be offered. There was one devotee, Sotra, at that time Sotra Maharaj. He was telling when I was with him, and he'll come back and eat, and then he was about to go to Eastern Europe. He said, now I've got to switch on my austerity mode. And when he goes there, he barely eat. Because they don't know how to cook. Just throwing something, and you know, you might as well go on your austerity mode. I remember when I first came to Bali, working for the BBT. But people in Bali have a very peculiar habit. They cook in the morning, and that will be breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But somehow, when it's festival time, they can cook wonderful preparation, but somehow during normal day, they don't eat them. They cook breakfast. And it was some really, I could not adjust to that kind of food. So what I did, I just eat a little bit and just eat a lot of fruits. And the devotee will ask me to come for lunch. And I said, no, I just eat only once a day. And I was starving. I was starving the whole time I was there. But the devotee was thinking I was so austere that I eat only once a day. But I didn't want to embarrass them or anything. So I just said, no, I just eat only once a day. Don't worry. I was very austere. So you never know. When you travel and preach, and you just have to depend. But still, somehow, Krishna provide. Krishna take care. You don't get skinny or you don't get. No. In fact, normally we see devotees, they're normally not skinny. I don't know about nowadays, but in early time, normally after you join the movement, after 2-3 months, you usually put on 10-20 pounds. Prasadam is so good. People just stop here. There's no. So Krishna is definitely taking care of the devotee, but we have to understand what that taking care means. We cannot have a very narrow or preconceived idea of how Krishna is going to take care of us or how Krishna is going to protect us. But we know for sure Krishna promised in Bhagavad Gita. In fact, he didn't just promise. He told Arjuna to declare it. Say, you declare it, because when I say something, sometimes people may not believe. But you know, if we ask a devotee, then Krishna makes sure that the promise of the devotee is being kept. He said, you declare it, then my devotee never perishes. He would even go so far to, in order to protect his devotee, Krishna would go so far as to even break his own promise. This is how much love he has and so affectionate he is towards his devotee. In the battle of Kurukshetra, at the chiding of Duryodhana, Bhishma said, okay, tomorrow I'll fight so hard that either Krishna will have to break his promise to protect his devotee or Arjuna will be in great danger of being killed. And next day, Bhishma was fighting so ferociously, and Arjuna was in danger. And in order to protect his devotee, Krishna got down from his chariot and picked up a broken chariot and was rushing towards Bhishma to kill him in order to protect Arjuna. And Bhishma, of course, he was also a devotee, and he said, come, my lord, come. But of course, just as he was approaching the sunset, the conch shell blew. And that was the end of the battle for that day. In this way, Krishna protected his devotee, who also kept his promise. But the point was that he was willing to go as far as to break his own promise, not to fight in the war, in order to protect his devotee. So throughout the Shastra, we find how Krishna never abandoned his devotee. He's always there. He's always there to protect his devotee. But we just have to understand that this protection, the way Krishna protects us, the way Krishna care for us or reciprocate with us or how he shows his affectionate may not be in a way that we, according to our preconceived ideas. We cannot limit, try to limit how Krishna deals with us. All we can do is just try to have the faith, develop that faith that yes, whatever situation is, Krishna will protect. And in due course of time, it will be revealed how the situation we were in or put through was always beneficial. If we just accept and surrender to it, it always turned out beneficial. So sometimes we ask, how can Krishna, this devotee is so surrendered, how can, why is he put in this situation? Oh, that devotee is so sincere and so surrendered, why is he put in that situation? We may not be able to see, but we at least we can know for sure that this is, Krishna is dealing with that situation. Krishna has put that devotee in that situation for a purpose, for a reason, and ultimately it's always for the benefit of that person. Sometimes Krishna may use a devotee to teach others. Using a devotee. And they say how? And in time to come, people say, oh, this devotee, he was put through such difficulty and still he's maintained his firm faith and devotion. He was so strong in his devotion and surrender. And Maharaj Parikshit, he was cursed. And he showed, as a devotee of so renowned, when he was cursed, he could have counteracted the curse. The father of this boy, Sringa, he came and informed Maharaj Parikshit, please do something about it. My foolish boy has mistaken curse you. Please do something about it. And he could have counteracted the curse, but he didn't. Sometimes he prayed, oh Krishna, I've been cursed. Can you please protect me and remove this curse? Oh, that's rascal Krishna, kill that person. No, he just accepted it. This is the will of providence, he accept. And he just left everything. It's not easy to live. Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of the world. Sometimes for us, even with our whatever little attached procession we have, it's so difficult to give up. But Maharaj Parikshit, he was emperor of the world. Can you imagine? He was a powerful king with a huge army. Beautiful, beautiful wife. And treasury was filled up. So much wealth. He just left it behind. And went to the forest and prepared himself. He just accepted that, okay, within 7 days I'll die. Let me prepare myself. He just accepted. And this way Krishna used him for the Bhagavatam to be spoken. Shukadeva came to speak Bhagavatam and Maharaj Parikshit hear Bhagavatam. In this way Bhagavatam was spoken for the benefit of mankind. So like that. So when you read Bhagavatam, there's so many stories like that throughout the scriptures, how different devotees put into different situations. One of my favorite stories, I think I told that story here before. One of my favorite stories, some of you may have heard, but it's such a nice story, I'd like to repeat it. And after all, and everything we say is repetition anyway. It's nothing new under the sun. There was this minister of the king. You heard that story? The minister of the king. Whatever happened, whatever advice the king was asked, he was all saying, oh, this is all Krishna's mercy. All Krishna's mercy. And one time the king cut his finger. And he was, obviously he was upset because he cut his finger. He approached his minister and said, well, I'm such a nice, you know, I do yagya, I do all this, you know, worship the Lord. How can this happen to me? And the minister said, this is all Krishna's mercy. And of course, the king didn't see it that way. He was not too happy about it. He said, my minister has gone cuckoo. It's crazy. Everything just Krishna's mercy. He said, throw him in the dungeon and see what he has to say. So he threw him in the dungeon. He said, the guy said, okay, my dear minister, so what do you have to say to this now? Oh, this is all Krishna's mercy. So one day the king went hunting. And he was attacked and captured by some forest people. So they captured him with the intention of offering him to Kali, in sacrifice. So they bathe him, wash him, you know, and prepare him on the altar. And the priest came by and said, wait, before we sacrifice this animal, you have to check if it's perfect for offering. They check his different limbs, and they found out that one of his fingers was missing. They said, no, this animal is not fit for sacrifice. Missing limb. So he was really shaken. He came back, said, release the minister, release the minister. And they said, okay, I'm really sorry what I had to put you through, but, you know, now I can understand why by losing my finger, it was Krishna's mercy, because I could have lost my life. He said, but there's one thing I do not understand. You are such a great surrendered devotee of the Lord, and why did Krishna put you in that situation? And you get, now the king become displeased to you, and you're thrown into the jail and all that. He said, don't you understand? I'm your minister. Wherever you go, I go. So when they capture you, they capture me. And when they find out that you are not fit, they'll find that I am fit. They offer me in sacrifice. So isn't this Krishna's mercy that he locked me up during that time? So at the time of happening, someone with less faith may say, what is this? I'm so surrendered. Why Krishna has created a situation that the king is angry with me? I get thrown into jail. But Krishna make all these arrangements just to protect his devotee. And it will be revealed later also how that Krishna, will tell. He said, no, I'm not abandoning you. You just go back. I have something I have to do. I have a mission to perform. I'll go into the city, and he had gone to the city to meet different people. Meet different devotees, the washerman, the kupja, the hunchback. No, not the washerman. The washerman, he chopped off his head. The kupja, garland decorated with Krishna, Balaram with the cowboys, with nice garland. And of course, he came there to kill Kamsa. And after he killed Kamsa, he did go and visit Akrura. So he didn't abandon. But sometimes a few devotees feel abandoned. Oh, why are you leaving me now? Because the devotee always, in the association of Krishna, they always want to be in this association of Krishna. Always hankering for the association of Krishna. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays in the Shishastakam. He says, separation one moment is like 12 years or more. So the devotee don't want to be separated from Krishna. It's so painful. It's just like sometimes the spiritual master come and visit, they're looking forward. And when the spiritual master leave, you feel like, oh, there's still like certain emptiness in our heart. So know for certain that Krishna is always his Bhakta Vatsala. He's not known as Bhakta Vatsala for nothing. He's always very affectionate towards his devotee. So, are there any questions, comments? Yes. Now that's the nature of them. That's the nature of the material world. As long as we're in this material world, there will always be problems. But sometimes Krishna may increase that for us. Yeah, this is all tying in the interaction of the karma between the living entities. But sometimes Krishna also use other living entity to teach us.
So it can be
whatever it is, he just said, this is my karma, just let me accept it. Just accept it. And this is Krishna's mercy. Of course, when we do something foolish, we don't say, this is Krishna's mercy. You're going to do something foolish, oh, this is Krishna's mercy, We go out and get drunk, It's Krishna's mercy, He inspired me to get drunk, so teach me a lesson.
So when we get disturbance from our own mind.
Yeah, that's our foolishness.
We
No, that's our foolishness. So I'm so foolish, so let me surrender to Krishna so I can get rid of this foolishness. So in other words, the bottom line is that the devotee see every opportunity, every situation as an opportunity to surrender to Krishna. Rather than to get into the details of why, how, who, all that. No, if it's a problem, we try to solve it. But whatever it is, it's another opportunity to surrender to Krishna. So if we develop that kind of attitude in our spiritual life, every situation is an opportunity to surrender to Krishna. Doesn't matter. It doesn't become good or bad anymore. And after all, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what is good and bad in this material world? There's nothing good or bad. Anything that is not related to Krishna is all bad. And everything related to Krishna is all good. So what is a good situation? What is a bad situation? It's how you use it. You use a situation to surrender Krishna, it becomes a good situation. Although externally it may seem to be bad. Yes.
Just a comment from, because he's talking about the Sisakta first and check him out. So some of us might think, you know, better skip the prayer. So, you know, like it's a dangerous prayer, you do whatever you want to do with you. But my comment is that they call it conditioned conviction. We know about the condition and constitution of faith. The conditioned conviction, that is, in that particular prayer, that is the gold standard for devotees. People are totally surrendered to Krishna and they have come to that conviction. But most of us who are not really there, of course, we're not there, definitely not there, will have this challenge going on all the time. But the other conviction, conditioned conviction, can be towards the spiritual nature or the material nature. Just like you are giving an experience, people who are drunk and staring at you and vomiting at you and whatever. So even we have this experience when you do Harinam or something like that, people make faces at you. And I remember once, you know, one devotee even showed, not a devotee, somebody else was showing his bum, you know, towards the devotee. But you'll be shocked what the devotee did. He also showed his bum. Anyway, what I'm saying is, just as they are totally surrendered to Maya, so we have to be totally surrendered to Krishna. That's the gold standard. Yeah. Of course, we are being human and with our problems, we have problems. I mean, we have doubts. But in recent times, like Prabhupada himself was totally, you know, that's a perfect example, he was totally in this condition, conviction. Even when in Janajata, he threw heart attack, and then he prays to Krishna, you know, whatever you do to me, you know, it's up to you now. So just, I'm just praising them. It's a standard, it may not be there, but we keep praying so that one day we can get this.
I mean, well, most of the prayers we chant, we are not there. But this is where we want to go. By constantly associating. It's just like, by association you become. So by constantly associating with these prayers, with this pastime, with the knowledge and hearing Bhagavatam, all these things, gradually we get there. Doesn't matter how conditioned we are, if we hear it enough, you start thinking and acting that way. It's a matter of exposing ourselves to the process of Krishna consciousness as much as possible. And of course, as we are exposing ourselves to Krishna consciousness process, the more we do it, not willingly, but consciously, the more we do it consciously, the faster the effect will be. If you do it mechanically, it may take a longer time. It will happen, it will take a little longer time, but the more consciously we perform our activity of Krishna consciousness, the faster we reach that goal. Yes, Muhammad Prabhu. No comment today? Yes,
Prabhu.
Yes,
Prabhu.
Siddhama Prabhu. So reciting Shishastakam is also a way of glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just just be conscious that we have to know what we are doing. We cannot go through our day with just mechanically. We try to understand. Take some moments. It doesn't have to be a few hours, but take a few moments and reflect on what we're doing. Just the other day, last week, we went to Bhakta's house. We just had some sangha, a few devotees. And one of the topics he put up for discussion was what is the thing that inspires us the most in our Krishna consciousness? In our Krishna consciousness. So he was saying the chanting Hare Krishna. Another devotee was saying that it's like a reverse thing. Sometimes when you are not completely focused in our spiritual life, we tend to fall a bit in Maya, and that, oh, better get back to Krishna consciousness so I don't fall into Maya. That's another way. So different devotees were giving different, and then while they were saying, I was just thinking about it, and I thought, actually what inspired me most is gratefulness. Just be grateful. That's how I feel. Just be grateful that we have this opportunity to be here, to serve, to engage in Krishna service, to chant the holy name, to take prasadam, to have the association of devotees. Just be grateful. Because we cannot just take it for granted. Take it for granted that it's like, you know, you owe me that. I'm supposed to. Even though it's our constitutional position to as eternal servant of Krishna, but we're just grateful that that Prabhupada brought Krishna consciousness out of India. Not only for the Westerners or other Asians, it's also for the Indians themselves. Because many of the Indians, they came in contact with Krishna consciousness outside of India. You may have heard of Krishna, but we don't really know what it is until they came out of India. So we're just grateful for what Prabhupada did. And that's a great inspiration. So be grateful every now and then during the day, take some moment to reflect. Be grateful for where we are and what we're doing. That here I am. I'm not just doing a normal service. I'm not just washing pots. I'm washing a pot that has been used to cook for Krishna. And can you imagine how great it is? It's such a, you know. I mean, if we really take time to think about it, we just get floored by that. When it really finally hit us, that what we are doing here, you were just like, wow. You know, wow. And we will really, really appreciate it deeply. Take some moment to reflect on that. And that will be great inspiration that every little thing we do is like so wonderful. So wonderful. Right. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.